This is The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. The Department of Land and Natural Resources is working on its sea level rise, vulnerability, and adaptation report due to the legislature later this fall. It's the first such assessment. Over the past 14 months, DLNR has been holding meetings to share some of its preliminary findings. The latest meeting is today in Kailua Kona. Although the report is not yet final, DLNR hopes the meetings will give more communities the opportunity to prepare for long-term impacts. Sam Lomo is the administrator of the Office of Conservation and Coastal Lands, and he's on the line now. Thank you for the time today.
Hi, Beth Ann.
When you have been sharing this with communities for now the last 14 months and assessing more information as you've been going along, what is it that has been coming to you that the rest of us aren't necessarily paying attention to, despite what we think we may know about some of the impacts of sea level rise?
Well, like you said, we've been working on this report for the past 14 months, and we've been conducting quite a few public meetings, and we've been meeting with government officials. We've held several large conferences trying to solicit input from people regarding the recommendations we are looking towards. But one of the things that we keep finding with studying this issue is the gravity of the problem of sea level rise facing the Hawaiian Islands and the ever-changing science that we're trying to keep pace with regarding sea level rise projections in terms of when certain sea level rise benchmarks are going to be reached and what the extent of those sea level rise benchmarks are.
So what are they now, as you are seeing the latest information?
Well, when we started this report really a couple years ago, we were trying to figure out a couple of really difficult issues. Number one was what we were going to model, how we were going to model it, and what numbers we were going to use. And so we initially went to the IPCC report, the assessment report number 5 by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And we looked at, for instance, 3.2 feet of sea level rise by 2100. That was a conservative estimate by the IPCC AR5 report. That was in 2014. And what we're finding is that even since 2014, the science has been changing. And so, for instance, there are a number of reports that have been published recently that indicate the IPCC report is potentially undershooting, because they don't really consider the behavior of the ice sheets, Antarctica and Greenland, which appear to be experiencing some significant melting. And so,
is that sort of a really notable omission, or one that hasn't been accounted for that should be brought into all of this information? And if so, how are you accounting for it?
Well, the IPCC will be doing another update, assessment report, I guess, 5, 6, and everybody's pretty confident that they will have a better understanding of what's happening with Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets, and that will surely change the predictions on sea level rise extent. So, but there's been a number of scientists and authors who are studying the issue already, and so we can consider looking at their numbers and possibly adjusting our numbers to better reflect reality. So, for instance, we're looking at 3.2 feet of sea level rise, not saying that it's a benchmark for 2100, but indicating that number could be reached earlier than 2100. And so, therefore, we're asking people to consider planning communities, planning infrastructure, and considering 3.2 of sea level rise, perhaps even now, in terms of your planning horizons, not waiting several decades or to initiate that process. The time is now to consider making adjustments for higher levels of sea level as we speak.
When you are looking at perhaps reaching that level before 2100, do you have a sense of how much before 2100? That's a difficult date for a lot of people to be able to wrap their minds around. Even, 2050 sometimes can be difficult for people to conceive of.
Yeah, unfortunately, there is no exact date. There's no magic number.
Are you talking like perhaps 20 years beforehand? I mean, I'm not looking for an exact date, mm-hmm. but some sort of range in which people might be able to see that, 20 years might mean a very real difference in what would happen 50 years hence.
I hear what you're saying, but I can't overemphasize the importance of this issue. Let me just give you one quick example. This Sunday, Honolulu had very extreme high tides. In fact,
we've had king tides all summer.
Yes, but this one last Sunday potentially was the highest tide ever recorded in Honolulu tide gauge, and the tide was running, maybe 10 inches above the normal predicted tides. And so we're looking at already an additional foot of sea level on top of existing tides. We were told by the scientific community that, we can expect a foot of sea level rise by 2050. Well, maybe it's an anomaly, but we just experienced almost a foot of sea level rise. And so it's a very difficult issue to get our head around. So we're suggesting that people look at what we're proposing. They look at the areas that we're identifying as sea level rise exposure hazard areas, and we're asking people to consider, when they do long-term planning, to consider incorporating a sea level rise benchmark in their planning of something like 3 feet of sea level rise.
Sam, what would be some of those areas in case people haven't taken note before?
Some of the areas of... Could you come again with that question?
Well, you're just talking about some of the areas that might be experiencing sea level rise that you've identified, and perhaps that's not necessarily something that most people carry around in their consciousness, aside from hearing a great deal about, for example, Waikiki.
I talk to people about this all the time, and you go down to Mapunapuna, and you can see the flooding going on there. It's alarming. You can go anywhere along the shoreline, the boat harbors, and there's all kinds of high tide flooding going on, which is obviously exceeding the capacity of these areas to handle to handle the situation. If you walk the beaches, you can see the beach berms are getting overtopped in these higher tide conditions. A lot of low-lying areas, you'll find standing water, they call it, I guess, what the term is they use, sort of like dry land flooding. There's no rain, and yet areas that normally flood during rainfall events are seeing significant amount of water, but that's from the ocean. So it's really anywhere along the coastline in low-lying areas you're going to see, pretty significant flooding when we have these king tides.
We've got to go in just a second, and as you mentioned, the king tides, and we've been hearing about this all summer and certainly last Sunday, but people tend to forget fairly quickly. What is it that you think has to happen to bring this into to normalize that kind of conversation and make people far more aware on a daily basis?
Well, we have to do education, and education meaning we have to get the science in the community. We have to explain to people through peer-reviewed professional reports that, sea level is a reality, sea level rise is accelerating, and we're modeling sea level rise impacts throughout the state. We give people the tools then to take that and to basically turn that into policy or turn that into new plans or programs or legislation to help us make the necessary adjustments so that we can mitigate as much as possible the detrimental effects the sea level rise are going to cause for us. So,
well, we'll hope that happens. Thank you very much for the time today.
Yeah, no worries.
Sam Lemo is the administrator of the Office of Conservation and Coastal Lands. The DLNR meeting happens tonight at 6 in the West Hawaii Civic Center Council Chambers.